If you are going away,
remember to take 702 with you
on the 702 app.
Now, talking about keeping healthy, the vaccine is coming to South Africa. There are various versions of this vaccine. And a study has found that 53% of people are willing to take the vaccine. But what about the rest? And we spoke about fake news earlier. And there's sort of concern about whenever a vaccine comes out, will I be okay with it? How will my body respond to it? And I think it's very important that we speak to the experts, we talk about the vaccine, and talk about what's going to be happening possibly this year. On the line is Professor of Vaccinology at the University of the Witwatersrand, Professor Shabir Mahdi. Professor, good morning, and thank you so much for giving up your time to come on to 702.
Good morning, Ray. Thank you for having me.
Right. So the vaccine's coming, but there are different versions, aren't there? There's the AstraZeneca one. There's also the Pfizer one. What's the difference?
So the technology that's used to produce these vaccines differ. And in essence, for the South African market, it's very unlikely that either the AstraZeneca vaccine or the Moderna vaccine, which uses what is known as messenger RNA technology, would become available in South Africa for a number of reasons. For the Pfizer vaccine, it includes that that vaccine needs to be stored at ultra-low temperatures, which is not pragmatic in the South African context, and in fact, in most countries. The Moderna vaccine, unfortunately, for both of the vaccines, the supply of the vaccines during the course of 2021 is going to be fairly limited, and any chances of South Africa being able to gain access to either of these vaccines, even if we didn't have the challenge with cold storage capacity, is pretty much non-existent almost. The other vaccine that has been now developed is the vaccine by AstraZeneca, as you mentioned, and that vaccine uses a similar sort of technology as the Russian vaccine, known as Sputnik V. That vaccine is what is known as vector-based vaccines. It's also a relatively new technology, but it has previously been used successfully to develop a vaccine against Ebola. So again, it's a relatively new technology, but one that has previously been proven to work. And certainly with COVID, we're in a fortunate situation that that success with Ebola has been repeated with the COVID vaccine as we are using this technology. That particular vaccine is much more easy to deploy, and the ability to scale up manufacture is much greater than a messenger RNA vaccine. So of all of the vaccines that are currently licensed, the one that is most likely to become available in South Africa would be the AstraZeneca vaccine or one of the other vaccines that might also report on safety and efficacy results in the near future.
Right. So, Professor, obviously people are concerned about these vaccines. The study finding that only 53% of people are willing to take the vaccine. Maybe you can take us through some of the trials then with the AstraZeneca vaccine. How safe is it? What trials do they go through? What's the process?
So for the vaccines that have currently been licensed either in the US or in the UK and some other regulatory authorities now, these trials have enrolled between 20,000 to up to 30,000 individuals. And usually to be able to determine whether a vaccine protects against COVID-19, you don't need to enroll that many people. In South Africa, as an example, I'm busy with two trials where we're enrolling between 2,000 and 4,500 individuals, and we would be able to establish whether the vaccine protects against COVID-19. The main reason for enrolling such large numbers is for you to be certain in terms of the safety of the vaccine, in that we're wanting to detect whether there are relatively uncommon side effects of the vaccine. Across all three of these vaccine studies that have now been published in the international peer-reviewed journals, there hasn't been almost any severe vaccine-associated illnesses. Which basically speaks to the safety of the vaccine. And I think what we need to emphasize is that vaccines are not developed to harm people. Vaccines are developed to save lives. And that is what COVID-19 vaccines are all about. No scientist in the world will develop a vaccine to harm people.
Yeah. Are they quite expensive? Because there is the big question about why don't we have it yet? What goes into this? Is it the cost of the development, or is it actually the cost of the product that we'll be getting?
So the cost of the vaccine is very tenfold. As an example, the AstraZeneca vaccine is going to cost roughly at about $2.50 to $3 per dose. The Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine are in a region of $20 to $40 per dose. So the AstraZeneca vaccine is much cheaper. But part of the reason for that is, like I've mentioned, they do use different technology. So the manufacturing costs would differ for the different vaccines. And ability of the company to basically scale up manufacture would also influence the pricing of the vaccines. And then there's obviously the issue of the demand. So AstraZeneca has indicated that they will be selling vaccine at no profit during the course of the pandemic, whereas Pfizer and Moderna have made it clear that they are making money out of the development of their vaccine. So there's a number of factors that contribute to the pricing of the vaccine. The reason why South Africa doesn't have much security in terms of gaining access to vaccine, unfortunately, largely is an effect impact, is a consequence of the strategy that government has employed in terms of trying to gain access to vaccine and at what stage it started to engage with different role players. Initially, it put all of its eggs in a single basket in that it tried to gain access to vaccine through the COVAX facility, which is a multinational initiative. Unfortunately, in the South African context, in fact, the COVAX facility paradoxically is not in the interest of the country, even if it shows social solidarity. It's not in our interest in terms of being able to get large quantities of vaccine at competitive prices.
Oh, wow.
But that is the route that government has decided on initially. There seems to be some shift in government now where they're beginning to have bilateral discussions, but that has come too late because having bilateral discussions now with companies that have already committed most of the vaccine that they're going to manufacture over the next 6 months to other buyers that have already paid for those vaccines in advance simply puts us at the back of the queue. So we're in a difficult position in terms of being able to gain access to vaccines during the course of 2021 for a significant proportion of our population.
That is a huge problem. So we basically are stuck because we keep saying specifically on this radio station, we have to have this vaccine, we have to have it now. But like you said, it looks like we snookered. This is not going to happen.
Well, it's going to happen at a very limited scale, probably less than 10% of the population. And what that effectively means is that the vaccine is going to have very little impact in terms of the trajectory of the pandemic. And South Africa probably faces the unfortunate scenario of not just having a second wave, but probably a third and a fourth wave. We need to be clear that vaccines are the only way out of this pandemic in the near future. Yes, we can continue, we can allow for a pandemic to continue for another 2 to 3 years, and eventually we probably will develop natural immunity, resulting in what you also call herd immunity, where a sizable percentage of the population has become immune because of natural infection. But that comes at a cost of life. So right now, in terms of our strategy, or our failed strategy rather, to procure adequate quantities of vaccine for a sizable percentage of our population, we are in serious trouble.
That's shocking. That really is shocking. And of course, if you're thinking of a third and fourth wave, would you then expect this virus to once again change and once again we'll have a variant?
Unfortunately so. So the virus continues sort of mutating, the sort of some changes in terms of its genetic composition, which usually assists the virus in terms of being more successful in transmitting between individuals. And on occasion, it might result in a strain that does become more virulent. Fortunately, the current variants that have been identified are not necessarily more virulent in that it won't cause more severe disease, but it might be more transmissible.
So what happens next year? We have herd immunity. Could we possibly, if this vaccine doesn't come, could we possibly have herd immunity where us as South Africans, I suppose others around the world, also just start becoming sort of overcoming this, becoming immune to it on their own?
So the only way you're going to become immune to it is if you've been infected. And in South Africa, during the course of the first wave, all indications are that a sizable percentage of the population, especially in urban areas, did become infected. In Cape Metro, it was between 35 to 45%. In Gauteng, probably in a region of 25 to 30% in some areas. So for there to be sort of what we call herd immunity to this virus, it requires about two-thirds of the population to develop immunity against the virus. Now, for two-thirds of the population to develop immunity against the virus, it's going to probably take 3 to 4 waves. before you reach that sort of threshold. And then the big unknown is what is the durability of the immunity following natural infection? And the same thing goes for vaccines. We don't know that. So even if 2/3 of the population become infected and the durability of that immunity is only last for 1 or 2 years, then no, we're not going to reach herd immunity through natural infection. So there's still a lot of unknowns about this virus and what it would take to reach a state of herd immunity.
Prof, a question here from Michele Bohile asking the question, where do we know where this came from? Do we know more about the origins of this coronavirus? There have been so many theories, of course, but do we know, was it made? Is it just a natural something that came from bats and pangolins? Has there been progress on this?
So the World Health Organization is currently sending out a team to China to do a more intensive investigation in terms of the origins of the virus. Our current understanding, and based on experience with other coronaviruses, is that the most likely host to this virus are bats. And this virus basically has sort of jumped the species barrier to probably an intermediary into the human population. So I don't think that this is a virus that has necessarily been developed in the laboratory and then accidentally let loose, which is sort of one of the stories that has been going around. I think it's something that has naturally taken place, similar to what Ebola did. It came from that and went into the human population eventually.
Yeah, because you actually spoke about that with Ebola, the fact that the vaccinations are similar, the similar sort of line of thinking.
Correct. So with Ebola, what really was able to control the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, as well as more recently in the DRC, is vaccination. And that type of vaccination was highly effective in terms of breaking the chain of transmission of that virus. So anyone that believes that vaccines are not going to bring about an entry pandemic, I think that's a really unfortunate belief. And that is something that, in fact, was mentioned in a webinar by the chair of the MEC yesterday, that vaccines won't necessarily bring an end to the pandemic. Yes, vaccines won't bring an end to the pandemic if the country's plan is only to get enough vaccine for 10% of the population. But if the country's plan is to get enough vaccination for 2/3 of the population, you rest assured this pandemic will be controlled.
Wow, that is very, very, very worrying. Professor Shabir Mahdi, Professor of Vaccinology at Wits University, thank you so much for coming on to 702.
It's a pleasure, thanks.